Chapter 17. In the sunken dragon's cockpit, I felt a deep, low vibration, accompanied by an ominous booming sound. For a moment afterward, everything went back to the chilly, depressing calm. Then the dragon began gently rocking side to side. "What is happening, Skippy?" I demanded. When the absent-minded artificial duh-intelligence told me he planned to lower the lake level 30 meters, I feared he would do something brilliant and impractical. Just then I had a terrible hair-raising thought. "Please tell me you are not using some orbital mesa platform to boil away the lake water." "Huh. Wow, I hadn't considered that. Maybe I should..." "Maybe you should not," I protested. "Heating the water that much would cook me also." Oops, you have a point there. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I am not using mazes, unfortunately, because that would be awesome. Hot, but cool, you know. He chuckled. "Awesome, yeah. What are you doing, oh genius one?" "Draining the lake, Joe. Not all the way. I calculated the surface will drop 42 meters before it reaches temporary equilibrium and begins to refill." He explained his plan to me. "That is incredible, Skippy. I know there can be caverns beneath a lake. My aunt lives in the Finger Lakes of New York State, and some of those lakes are undermined with caves that were dug to extract salt or something. My aunt always worried about an accident might create a hole that could drain the lake away."
"An accident? Or a Skippy?" he chuckled.
"In this case, Joe, the entire region here is riddled with caverns. The reason this lake is so deep, I suspect, is that a glacier came through long ago, and the weight of the ice collapsed the roof of a cavern here. The caverns that still exist below the lake have more sturdy roofs, except for the weak spot I found, of course." I had to admit that his plan was inventively awesome. I also feared he might have forgotten a thing or two in his rush to take action.
"Let me ask you a question, Skippy. Millions of gallons of water are now rushing out of this lake, right?"
I used my arms to steady myself against the dragon's rocking side to side.
"Yep, it's draining even faster than I expected, because the force of the water flowing into the caverns under the lake is partly collapsing the roof there."
"Uh-huh, great. Two questions, then." The dragon rocked almost 30 degrees to port, and when it settled back down on its belly, it was still tilted about 10 degrees.
"All this water flowing underground won't damage the Elder Conduit thingy you are hoping to find beneath our feet, will it? Or block access to that area?"
Well, shit. Thanks a lot for ruining my happy mood, Mr. Buzzkill."
"Well, shit? For crying out loud, Skippy. How the hell can you be so..."
"Hey, give me a freaking break, will you? Damn it! For crying out loud, I dream up an amazingly incredible plan to drain a gosh-darn lake to save your ass, and all you can do is..." His voice became that of a whiny toddler.
"Have you thought of this or this?"
He sighed. "Jeez, Louise, you can be a nag. No, I hadn't thought about that, Joe," he grumbled. "This monkey brain thinking is kind of new to me. Let me crunch some numbers here. Okay, it looks like there is no danger of flooding the underground facility where we might find a conduit. Or maybe not no danger, it's... Crap, there is a danger, I guess. Nothing we can do about it now, right? What is your second question?"
"This dragon already hit the lake bottom, then rolled down an underwater hill until it came to rest here, wherever I am now."
"Yeah, duh. Joe, do I need to explain the concept of gravity to you? I'll keep it simple for your tiny monkey brain. Gravity is..."
"My question, Mr. Genius, is will the force of water now flowing out the drain you created knock the dragon off the ledge or whatever I'm on?" Because I do not like the idea of being inside this dragon while it tumbles down another, 100 meters... and then falls through a hole into an underground cavern where I will be buried forever."
He didn't answer immediately.
"Skippy? Well, shit. Oopsie? Oopsie?
The good news is you do not need to worry about falling into a cavern deep beneath the lake surface."
"Oh, good." I breathed a sigh of relief and instantly regretted using the extra oxygen. because the dragon's cockpit door will buckle inward from the water pressure, and you will be crushed before you fell halfway down to the drain hole. Oh, great. Thanks a lot. No problem, Joe. I know you could use some cheering up at a time like this, he said happily. Cheering up? Yeah, sure. Death would be instant and painless. No, not instant. Quick, anyway. 2-3 minutes tops. Maybe that isn't so painless. It would depend on how fast it takes you to pass out from drowning. Since I am not a meat sack, you will need to tell me how long that will take, given your body mass, oxygen supply. Really? You need to mention the word drowning right now? Perhaps I should stop trying to lift your spirits and stick to the facts. You think? The dragon rocked suddenly, then skidded to port. There was a grinding sound as the belly scraped on something beneath. Okay, somebody got up on the wrong side of the bed this morning, he complained. Don't be so cranky, Joe. From the limited scans you completed before getting shot down, I have a partial view of the underwater terrain in your area. But as I do not know your exact location, I can't predict whether the dragon will be pulled off whatever surface it is resting on. However, I do have some good news. There is a sort of gully below you. That gully is deep enough that if you fall down there, the dragon will not be lifted out and carried through the drain hole. Good news, then? I asked anxiously. Maybe not so much, Joe. The bottom of that gully is currently below crush depth for your cockpit door. If you get knocked down there before the lake surface falls substantially, it will be adios muchacho for you. And, if you are in the bottom of the gully when the lake finishes draining, you will still be too deep to relieve pressure on the cockpit door enough to get it open. This was poor planning, Joe. You should have warned me. I bit back a reply, very much wanting to choke him right then. Letting him silently consider his own failure was worse than anything I could say. Also, I didn't trust myself to speak right then, as the dragon rocked violently to port, and this time it didn't flop back on its belly. Instead, it skidded across the lake bottom with a shrieking, grinding sound. Then it fell, and kept falling. The dragon tumbled over and over, spinning around every axis on its way down, tail over nose, yawing left then right, and rolling to starboard. The dropship bounced all the way down. I could hear and feel the wings and engine nacelles being torn off. All I could do was sit strapped into the pilot seat, try to relax so the jarring impacts didn't tear a muscle, and keep my breathing as calm as possible. The carbon dioxide level in the cabin had long ago exceeded a dangerous level, so I was breathing my limited supply of emergency oxygen. Once that bottle was gone, I had no options. With a shuddering bang, the dragon halted its plunge. Whatever the ship hit, it was solid. There was no rocking back and forth after the initial impact. When the dragon began rocking again, it was gentle. After sitting rigidly tense following the final impact, I allowed myself to relax and breathe. Okay, I was still alive. The cockpit door hadn't collapsed and let high-pressure water crush and asphyxiate me. That was the good news. The bad news was I was even deeper in the lake than I had been, and Skippy had used the last trick in his bag of magic. What else could go wrong? No, wait, do not answer that. I don't want to know. Lieutenant Reed held one hand to her Z-phone earpiece and used the other to call a halt. Captain Zhao was taking a turn assisting Singh to limp along as best she could, so Sammy was in charge of comms.
Yes, Major Smythe, what is it?
Captain Zhou and his Night Tigers will be with you shortly. They have powered suits, and one of them can carry Singh. Are any of you injured other than Singh? Her leg doesn't appear to be serious. Sammy was puzzled.
How do you know that, Major?
Look directly above. Sammy tilted her head back and didn't see anything. Wait, she heard something, like the flapping wings of a hummingbird. A large hummingbird. Then, 10 meters above her, a drone, unstealthed.
Oh,
she waved.
No, just sing.
Understood. Hold your position. We know where the Theranin are, and if they become a threat to you, the Night Tigers will... He paused. Render them unable to threaten anything.
Yes, sir, Sammy replied with an ear-to-ear grin. What is happening to the lake?
The three pilots had gone down into a stream valley and could not see the lake from their position. That is one of Skippy's ideas. unknown if it will be successful or not. Joe, the lake level is about as low as it's going to get. If you wait much longer, it could begin rising again. I wish you could see the view from up here. Major Smythe's team is feeding me images from drones, and the lake level is way down. It is very dramatic. Hopefully the lake draining away scares the shit out of the Theranin.
I hope so, too. Should I try the door again now?
With one eye on the falling oxygen meter and the other eye on the water level in the cabin, I was anxious to get moving.
Yes, and please hurry. You don't have a lot of time.
I kinda know that, Skippy.
Sorry. Well, get moving, knucklehead. The stupid cockpit door still wouldn't budge. I tried moving the manual crank both ways, and nothing worked. All I accomplished was creating a slow leak at the bottom of the door. The leak was so slow that I couldn't see or feel the high-pressure water coming in. The first way I knew there had to be a leak was my ears painfully aching as the incoming water squeezed the cabin air into a smaller space and my flight suit adjusted to accommodate. A pressure gauge built into the left wrist of my flight suit indicated a slow and steady increase, like really slow. Cranking the door the other way didn't halt the leak. The door was absolutely jammed where it was.
"This damn door is not moving at all, Skippy," I reported, trying to keep emotion from my voice.
Crap. Darn it, I was afraid of that, Joe. Either the original water pressure bent the door too much, or the ship getting thrown around warped the door frame. I am sorry, Joe.
That's not your fault, Skippy.
I failed, Joe. I failed you.
No, you didn't, Skippy. You did great. You had a monkey-brained idea. I would never have thought of draining a freaking lake.
Really? You're serious?
Absolutely. Using missiles to drain a lake is totally inventive thinking.
It may seem odd that with me trapped and my oxygen running out, I was the one working to make someone else feel better about the situation. Part of my motivation was I felt empathy for Skippy's pain, and part of my motivation was to keep my mind off the declining supply of oxygen in my emergency bottle.
How did you dream up such an amazing idea?
Well, thank you, Joe. I think. Unless you're being sarcastic.
Totally for real, Skippy-o. I'm giving you props for being clever.
Oh, in that case, thank you very much. I'm not sure where exactly I got the idea from, Joe. He went on for a while, half speculating and more than half bragging about how magnificently clever he had been, while I zoned out, concentrating on slowing my breathing and letting my mind wander. The dragon was sitting almost completely still, with water in the cockpit sloshing very gently side to side. In the lights of my helmet, I watched the ripple move slowly from one side to the other. On the starboard side, the water was just touching the bottom of a horizontal handhold. I used it as a marker for how fast the water was rising. The answer was not fast at all. The good news was I almost certainly would run out of emergency oxygen before the water rose enough for me to drown. As good news goes, that totally sucks. I have a terrible fear of drowning. So, in that way, it was good news for me. On the west side of the lake, Major Smythe scanned the forest through the scope of his rifle, then pointed the muzzle at the ground as the three rescued pilots ran past him with Joe's Night Tigers.
"Retreat and cover," he ordered as he fell back with his people. "Captain Chandra, we are secure here. What is your situation?"
Chandra replied immediately. The Indian paratrooper was leading the eastern assault team, facing far more Theranin than had been on the west side of the lake.
"Approaching start line," he advised. "Charlie team had just reported they are in position below the ridgeline to the east. No contact yet."
"Understood.
I see from the drones those Theranin settlements extend at least 4 kilometers to your south."
Smythe had a good idea what to look for. At first, the land had appeared to be only forests and meadows. Then the drones had been able to discern cleared cropland and huts dotted through the forest. From the heat signatures on infrared, Smythe's team estimated they faced almost 1,000 Theranin with an unknown number of weapons, and unknown types of weapons. So far, the merry band of pirates had seen surface-to-air missiles, rifles with explosive-tipped rounds, grenades, and man-portable anti-armor rockets. If that was all the Theranin had for weapons, Smythe's people could deal with them. The trouble was, if all 1,000 were armed, They could outflank and overwhelm the Spec Ops teams, and if the little green bastards had something stronger, like powered armor or combots, the tide of the battle could turn against the humans in a hurry. Smythe needed to make a decision. Risk the lives of dozens in an attempt to clear 4 or more linear kilometers of enemy resistance, or hold their position and do nothing to assist Colonel Bishop. The question was, if they launched the assault, would it matter? To allow dropships to hover over the lake and lower a cable down to the sunken dragon, Smythe needed to be sure, damned sure, the area was clear of little green MFers armed with man-portable anti-aircraft missiles. Even a single Theranin with line of sight to the lake's lowered surface could launch or call in a deadly missile. If that happened, and the vulnerable hovering dropship's defenses could not intercept the incoming missile or missiles, then 4 more human lives would be at grave risk. All to save one. Before he gave the order, Smythe needed better situational awareness.
Skippy.
Yes, Major Smythe.
We have the 3 pilots who escaped. They are safe now. Captain Chandra has his people ready to—
I know what you are going to ask, Major, Skippy said quietly.
You do?
Smythe raised an eyebrow to Lieutenant Poole to his left, who silently mouthed, "What is up?"
Smythe shook his head.
"Yes, I do. I am not a military strategist or tactician, but even in my reduced state I can see the situation. You are weighing whether an assault to clear enemy positions east of the lake is worth the risk to rescue Colonel Bishop."
"Correct," Smythe answered slowly.
"An assault is not worth the risk to your team. I do not say that lightly, Major. There are 2 reasons your people should pull back now that the pilots have been rescued. First, despite my actions to drain the lake, Colonel Bishop is still trapped in the cockpit. The door is jammed solidly, and I do not see any way for him to get out. Second, an action to clear and secure the eastern shore would take longer than Joe's remaining oxygen supply. Thus, there is no point to risking a costly assault. At this point, there is nothing your team can do to assist Joe."
"Bloody hell."
Smythe swallowed hard, temporarily turned off the Z-phone's transmitter, and covered his eyes with a hand. After a moment in which the people around him knew their leader had just heard very bad news and also knew not to speak, he angrily wiped his eyes and turned the phone on again.
"I refuse to believe there is nothing to be done. Can we not send down a drone to cut open the cockpit door? Surely there is a way a drone could be dropped from high altitude by a dropship to minimize the exposure to AA fire."
"I thought of that, Major," Skippy said without any of his usual snarkiness. "None of the drones we have are capable of operating in water at that depth."
"Unacceptable," Smythe barked, his anger directed at the situation rather than at Skippy.
"Major, the equipment we have has been begged, borrowed, and stolen," Skippy gently reminded the Special Air Services soldier. "Everything we have with us is designed to operate in space, in the air, and on the ground. Submarine warfare is not a capability that has widespread use in the war between the Max Hulks and Rindaloo."
"This can't be the end," Smythe snapped. "There must be something we can do."
"Major Smythe, if there is, I am open to suggestions. Your quarrel is with time and the laws of physics, not with me."
"It's not with you," Smythe agreed.
He took a deep breath.
"You've done your best, Skippy."
"Thank you, but if the best I can do results in Joe suffocating under a stupid lake on a lame planet, then I am Skippy the Useless. Skippy the Idiot."
The AI's voice broke off in a fit of sobbing. When he recovered with a sniff, he asked,
"Would you like to talk with Colonel Bishop to confirm?"
"No," Smythe replied with a shake of his head.
"I'm the commander on the scene. I am not kicking the decision upstairs. Colonel Bishop has enough problems to deal with right now. Besides, we both know what his order will be."
"Yes, we do." Skippy sounded thoroughly miserable. Without wasting any more time, Smythe called Captain Chandra on the east side of the lake.
"Captain, pull your people back. I do not want contact at this time."
"Major Smythe?" Chandra asked incredulously. "Please repeat.
At this time, we are not, repeat, not proceeding with the operation. Pull back 0.5 kilometer and hold for another—"
He checked the timer Skippy had loaded on his Z-phone. It showed Joe Bishop had only 12 minutes of oxygen remaining.
"We hold for 15 minutes, he decided.
That should provide a cushion, in case Joe Bishop thought up one of his signature monkey-brained ideas to rescue himself. Then we conduct a retreat to the LZs and evac. Is that understood?
I acknowledge the order, Chandra replied unhappily. I do not understand.
Around him, his people were geared up and ready to hit the Theranon. Their supreme discipline would have them complying with an order to pull back, even if that meant abandoning their leader to a watery grave. It did not mean they would be happy about it.
Chandra out.
What's up, Cap?
Ranger Mahalchik asked quietly, not taking his eyes away from the scope of his rifle.
We're pulling back, then holding.
What?
Mahalchik broke concentration just long enough to glance at the Indian power trooper.
I don't like it either.
We have orders, Chandra announced with a hateful look at his Z-phone. With advanced Z-phone technology and an alien AI facilitating communications, he could not fall back on the old battlefield excuse of garbled communications.
Is Colonel Bishop safe already?
The ranger asked, confused.
I think that is very unlikely. We will conduct an orderly retreat.
Excuse me, Captain,
the ranger interrupted in a hoarse whisper.
They may change our plans a bit.
He gestured forward with his rifle where something moved in the forest. It was a trio of combats coming straight toward them at high speed.
Captain Joe, Smythe shouted.
I see it, Joe replied, as he and his two armor-suited companions were already rushing toward the east shore of the lake.
In the jarring, bouncing view of his visor display, he could see the powered armor team already on the east shore were speeding toward Captain Chandra's position. He also saw neither of the armor would reach Chandra before the three enemy combats overran Chandra's position.
We are on our way, but Major, I know.
Smythe was out of breath because he was also running toward Chandra, and Smythe didn't have the advantage of a mech suit. The three Night Tigers, although they started over a kilometer farther away, would blow past Smythe and reach Chandra's position much faster than the slow, unassisted humans.
Chandra is on his own.
Less than 2 minutes later, Joe and his two companions raced past Smythe without exchanging pleasantries, and Smythe slowed. Not because he knew no amount of effort would get him to the battle in time to do anything useful, but because the battle was over.
Hot damn,
Mahalchik gasped in disbelief, checking the counter on top of his rifle. He had fired only 18 rounds, all selected for explosive tips, but no way, should a Theranon combat have been stopped by 18 rounds from a Kristang rifle. Mahalchik barely had time to drop, roll behind a fallen log, and take aim before one of the combats was practically on top of him. Large-caliber rounds from the combat had chewed into the log, sending splinters to pepper the ranger's left side as he returned fire, with one of his rounds, by pure luck, striking a rocket fired by the alien machine. He carefully got to his knees, keeping the muzzle pointed at the combat that was down and only twitching slightly, with most of the bot scattered in pieces across the forest floor. The point was, he should not have had time to drop, roll behind a fallen log, and take aim. A combat that close should have shredded him before gravity could have pulled him behind the log.
What the f-?
He caught himself. Captain Chandra did not appreciate foul language, although he had used it on rare occasion. As the official common language of India was English rather than Hindi, Chandra had dropped F-bombs just like an American.
Yes.
Captain Chandra looked around at the three destroyed enemy combats. He looked at Mahalchik and nodded, safing his own rifle.
What the hell happened here? 16 rounds,
he recited the number expended from his rifle.
18 here,
Mahalchik reported, knowing Chandra would see the expenditure from every one of the team's weapons. Chandra did check that data in his helmet visor. Even if all rounds fired from the entire team impacted the combats, the tough machines should not have been so easily dispatched. More tellingly, Chandra's team, without the benefit and protection of armored suits, should have been wiped out. Instead, not a single soldier had been seriously injured. How could he explain that? He turned to the ranger, and they both spoke the same thought.
Skippy.
On Kobamic,
After a golden BB had shot down a dropship, Smythe's team had a brief firefight with armored Kristang, and the lizards had been decimated. That battle went in the humans' favor due to the intervention of an alien beer can.
"Nope, that wasn't me," Skippy scoffed through their earpieces. "From base camp with the skimpy bandwidth over the relays, no way could I hack into those combots. My guess is they are simply old, and their operators are out of practice. If the Thorannon have been on gingerbread as long as I suspect they have been, they may not have the advantage of cyborg implants. It is likely the operators used a manual backup control system. That is good news for you, because their aim was terrible. I mean, seriously. They didn't hit a single one of you?"
Chandra got a thumbs-up sign from his entire team, verifying the data available in the helmet visor. Not one person had suffered more than minor injuries from flying splinters and shrapnel. The people with Chandra were not wearing Kristang-powered armor, but they were all equipped with Kristang lightweight body armor panels and helmets, in addition to their standard UNEF gloves and boots. Mahalchik, standing a few feet away, had small spots of blood on one side of his uniform. When the ranger saw the team leader looking at a streak of blood coming down from his hip, he shook his head.
"I'm fine, Cap. It's just splinters got through a gap in armor panels. I'll spray some of that fake skin stuff."
He meant a nanobot enhanced spray sealant that temporarily formed a layer of artificial skin.
"When we have time."
"Get it looked at when we get back to the LZ."
Chandra knew the American did not want to remove body armor in a combat zone just to deal with minor cuts.
"That goes for everyone," he ordered,
looking around the battle zone in disbelief. Trees had been knocked down by large-caliber explosive-tipped rounds or rockets from combots, but all three of the alien-killing machines were now disabled and shattered. He should ask Skippy whether there were pieces like the machine's central processors that should be brought back to base camp for analysis. How could he explain his team's smashing victory? His earpiece buzzed. It was Major Smythe. How would he explain it?
"Captain Chandra,"
Smythe's words came out raggedly in Chandra's earpiece as the SAS man's breathing recovered from the hard run.
"Status."
Chandra knew Smythe had seen the brief battle through the data, and knew almost as much as Chandra did. But Smythe had not been there, not experienced the battle.
"Three combots attacked us. They came out of the ground. I have set up a perimeter, and we are now sweeping the area for underground threats. All three combots were destroyed. No significant injuries to my team."
"None?"
Smythe expressed surprise, despite having seen the same data in his visor.
"Assessment?"
"Those combots were... well, the best word I can think to describe them is clumsy,"
Chandra told the Spec Ops team leader.
"Clumsy?"
Smythe did not understand.
"Clarify," he ordered.
"Uncoordinated. They moved slowly. Poorly maintained, possibly. Their aim was off, and their reactions demonstrated poor situational awareness. Possibly their operators are at a distant location, and signal lag affected their control over the combots."
"Possibly."
Smythe was not convinced. He knew that the Merry Band of Pirates represented the absolute elite of human combat capability, and Smythe was immensely proud to command the ground team. They were excellent. They were outstanding. But against three combots, even the pirates were not that good. Chandra's team had been ambushed by superior technology. The forest floor there should have been littered with human bodies.
"You believe the enemy's capabilities were degraded?"
"My team, without powered armor, destroyed three Thorannon combots, and we sustained only minor injuries. How else could that have happened?"
Chandra asked as he watched an American Ranger and an Indian paratrooper take aim at a shattered combot and blow out its processing core, just to be certain the alien killing machine was dead.
"Major Smythe,"
Skippy interjected,
"there is a simple, alternative explanation for the success of Captain Chandra's team."
"What is that?"
Chandra asked.
"Monkeys kick ass,"
Skippy chuckled.
"Seriously?"
Smythe waited for a typical snarky remark disparaging his species.
"Yes, seriously. You keep getting unexpected shit thrown at you, and you keep winning. Drives me freaking crazy sometimes," Skippy muttered.
"Thank you, Mr. Skippy."
Chandra beamed with pride and saw several of his team giving each other high fives after hearing the alien AI's remark.
"Don't get cocky," Skippy warned. "You keep running up charges on your karmic credit card. That bill is coming due someday."
Major Smythe knew Colonel Bishop would have made a witty remark about whether the team got airline miles for using their karmic credit card, and then the young commander and the beer can would go off on a useless tangent on subjects unrelated to the mission. Smythe preferred the discipline of remaining on mission, which is why he qualified for special air services, and Joe Bishop would not have lasted one day in training. On the other hand, Smythe knew the undisciplined, wandering mind of Bishop is why that too young colonel had been able to dream up impossible plans time after time.
"Whatever the condition of enemy forces," Smythe assured Chandra, "your team was brilliant."
"Thank you." Chandra put aside for the moment the question of how his team had blown away three deadly combats and focused on what came next.
"Should we advance to contact?"
"Negative. Not without a better sense of what else the enemy has below ground. The Night Tigers will be at your position in..."
He checked the estimate in the upper right corner of his visor.
"Less than 1 minute."
Smythe would feel better when Chandra had three powered armor suits with him to deal with any future threats.
"Wait for them, then pull back to the LZ and await instructions." Smythe gave the order he did not like.
Next he contacted Lieutenant Colonel Chang back at home base.
"Colonel Chang, we are clear of enemy contact. No casualties on our side. We are pulling back to the LZ. Should we prep for immediate dust-off?"
"Are you confident you can secure the LZ?"
Smythe was mildly surprised by the question.
"Yes, the drones will alert us if the enemy attempts to approach. The risk is if there are any caverns near the LZ. Having those combats pop out of the ground was a nasty surprise."
"Can the drones scan the subsurface?" Chang asked, concerned.
"We're trying that now."
Smythe gestured to the soldier who was directing a drone to fly low enough that scanning below the surface might be possible. Seeing Smythe's unspoken question, the soldier waggled a hand to indicate results were not yet available.
"We can hold the LZ regardless, sir. Why are we not pulling out immediately? Colonel Bishop ordered..."
"I know Colonel Bishop's orders, and I am countermanding them," Chang declared. "We are not abandoning him down there. Skippy reports his action to lower the water level was not effective. Bishop is still trapped in the cockpit, and his oxygen is running low. Major, we are getting him out of there one way or another."
While Smythe was wholly in favor of rescuing their captain, he knew how Bishop would feel about a dangerous rescue attempt.
"Sir, Bishop..."
"Bishop doesn't want anyone risking their lives for him. That, 'aw shucks, I am nothing special' bullshit doesn't fly with me. We need Bishop as much as we need Skippy.
Major, you are an outstanding Special Air Services officer. I am a fairly decent artillery officer. Neither of us or anyone else aboard the Dutchman is capable of thinking up the crazy plans we need to survive out here. The ideas we need to secure our home planet. Bishop is special, and it is sure as hell worth taking a risk to rescue him."
"I agree completely, sir," Smythe said with great relief. "What can my team here do?"
"I don't know yet," Chang admitted. "I am working with Skippy on the problem. Hold the LZ and I'll contact you."
Chang had already ordered a Falcon dropship to overfly the lake slowly and in full stealth, keeping to the western shore. The airspace craft reported no hostile action or any sign the enemy had detected it. Swinging around in a loop, the Falcon repeated the maneuver, and again the enemy did not appear to have noticed. Then, following Chang's orders, the Falcon made a third pass, this time flying faster and dropping stealth briefly. That action drew an immediate response from the Theranin on the east shore of the lake. A deadly anti-aircraft missile arced out toward the Falcon. It was only a single missile, and the Falcon was able to re-engage stealth, confuse the missile's sensors, and destroy it with six bursts from a defensive maser turret. But the damage was done. Clearly, whatever action the merry band of pirates took to rescue Bishop, it could not involve dropships hovering above the lake. Even in stealth, a dropship hovering stationary long enough would very likely be detected and attract a volley of missiles.
"Skippy," Chang called the alien AI via Z-phone, even though the beer can was resting on a table only 100 meters away across the base camp.
We need an idea to rescue Bishop.
Yeah, I know. I tried that already, and I assure you I am working as hard as I can to develop an alternative rescue plan. I came up with a plan to drain the lake after Sergeant Adams threatened me.
She threatened you?
Chang could not imagine what would be an effective threat against the AI.
Adams was going to physically harm you?
No, Skippy sighed. She threatened to be disappointed with me.
That worked? Chang asked, astonished. You care what Adams thinks about you?
I care what all of you monkeys think about me. Damn, I should not have said that. I wouldn't have said that if I still had my full awesomeness. Facing imminent death has made me introspective, and that is inconvenient. I seek admiration from all you monkeys, but especially the four of you.
Chang knew which four Skippy meant. Joe Bishop and the original pirates who escaped from jail with him. Bishop, Chang, Adams, and Desai.
The four of us have been with you the longest, but surely by now that doesn't matter.
The time doesn't matter as much as it did, now that I have been on multiple missions with others like Giroux, Sims, and Smythe.
What does matter is why the four of you are the originals.
Because we were in jail together?
Strictly speaking, they had not been in jail together, for none of the three had seen or known about the others until a Ruhar orbital strike damaged the jail building and Bishop escaped from his cell.
Not because you were in jail.
Why you were in jail? Skippy explained. You and Joe were promoted by the Kristang for what your armies would describe as simply doing your jobs. UNEF and the Kristang needed a publicity stunt, so you and Joe were chosen as convenient symbols. I don't care about any of that crap. Joe acted decisively and bravely at Fort Arrow, but a lot of the soldiers who died in the dining facility there would have done better than Joe. The reason I care that the four of you respect me is that you all were in jail, because you all had to make very difficult moral decisions. Decisions that came at great personal cost to yourselves.
Ah, Chang understood.
We all refuse Kristang orders to retaliate against Ruhar civilians.
Exactly. The four of you went against orders to protect innocent lives. That impressed me.
You might not know this, given what you probably perceive as my casual approach to the subject, but morality is very important to me. On a basic level, it is the only thing that is truly important to me. I don't completely understand why, because access to my full memories are still blocked, but I have the feeling some very bad things happened in my past, and I am sort of trying to set things right. It's more of a feeling than fact.
Chang was torn between taking Skippy's comments at face value and needing a better understanding of the alien AI's psychology. It might be important someday. He stepped outside the shelter and lowered his voice to prevent others from overhearing the conversation.
Colonel Bishop and myself have been responsible for civilian deaths. When we raided the asteroid base on our first mission, not all the Kristang we killed there were military. In the civil war we started, many civilians are bound to be caught up in the fighting.
You, and especially Joe, have been responsible for the deaths of alien civilians. I see an important moral distinction between what you have done out here and what the two of you refuse to do on Paradise. If I am wrong, please correct me. Out here, you have taken actions which might result in unintended collateral damage. You took those actions to protect your species from greater harm. On Paradise, you disobeyed orders to deliberately murder civilians. Killing those civilians would not have served any purpose other than proving how harsh and cruel the Kristang can be.
Skippy, Chang replied in a near whisper. I was trained in artillery. We fire shells at targets we can't see based on spotter data that may be inaccurate. When I became an officer, I had to deal with knowing I might be firing my weapons at the wrong target and killing innocent people. Thankfully, I never fired a shot in anger until after I left Earth.
He looked at the clock on his Z-phone.
We can debate moral issues later. Have you thought of a way to rescue Colonel Bishop?
Unfortunately, no. I've been considering options while we talked, and I continue to develop ideas now.
We have flown our Therenan dropships in the atmosphere of gas giant planets to obtain fuel for the ship. Is it possible to use a dropship underwater? The turbines will not work in water. But could we use the engines in rocket mode?
No, sorry. I already considered that possibility.
It is true we sent dropships deep into a gas giant, but the pressure in the atmosphere there does not compare to the pressure at the bottom of that lake. The dropships were extensively modified and tested to survive flying in a thick atmosphere. We do not have time for any modifications, which I believe would not work anyway. Colonel Chang, I hate to say this, but if Joe is going to get out of that dragon, he needs to do it by himself. If anyone can think up a creative idea, it is Bishop. I hope you are right about that, Skippy grumbled, because I have been very disappointed in him so far today.